Hello, this is Karen, and for the next hour, I'll be reading from the December 7th issue of the Times of Wayne County on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. The first article on the main page, Ahead of the Curve, 2025 Good Fruit Growers of the Year. Data diligence, technology adoption, and horticultural acumen earned Williamson's DeMarie family the 2025 Good Fruit Growers of the Year Award. When Tom and Allison DeMarie took over the family orchard in Williamson, New York in the late 1980s, it was all processing blocks with 40 trees to the acre. A few decades later, 90% of the farm focuses on fresh, and it's moving toward 100% fresh under the supervision of their daughter, Kristen DeMarie. Such a comprehensive transition from processing to fresh was a remarkable achievement, requiring a lot of foresight, work, and investment, said Cornell University horticultural professor Terrence Robinson. They're top-notch growers, Robinson said. They were one of the first to buy into precision crop load management. If you ask people in the apple industry, you'll learn that the DeMaries have always been ahead of the curve. Whether it's testing new varieties, adopting orchard mechanization and digital technology, or learning from and teaching other growers. For these reasons and more, the Good Fruit Grower Advisory Board named the DeMaries the 2025 Good Fruit Growers of the Year. They're great people, said Mike Wittenbach, Michigan grower and member of the advisory board that chose the DeMaries. They're an asset to the whole U.S. industry. Rod Farrow, fellow New York grower and the 2020 Good Fruit Grower of the Year, said Tom and Allison have been at the forefront of high-density fresh orchards and are always willing to share what they've learned. They've given so much back to the industry, Farrow said. They thoroughly deserve the recognition. When Tom and Allison began running the farm after Tom's father, Donald DeMarie, they questioned their future in the processing market. Fresh apples offered more flexibility and independence. They could choose who to sell to instead of being tied to a single buyer. We knew we had to make changes or not stay in the business, so we decided to risk it all, Allison said. We never hesitated to take a block out, and we never regretted it. You can't grow stuff you're losing money on. They had data to back up the decision, thanks to Allison's job as a farm business management specialist with Cornell Cooperative Extension. I was running budgets for Cornell, comparing planting systems, she said. We looked at the results and said, we either fully commit to this or get out. So they started pushing out old blocks and putting in new ones, a process that continues to this day. Current plantings are spaced 2 or 2.5 feet by 12 feet, 1,500 to 1,800 trees per acre. They keep the rows at 12 feet to make space for machinery. They started using mobile platforms 25 years ago for thinning, trimming, and other non-harvest tasks. They quickly learned that getting workers off the ground and onto moving platforms dramatically improved efficiency. 6 workers on a platform do the same amount of work as 8 or 9 workers using ladders. These days, most of their harvesting happens on 4 Huron Fruit Systems platforms and 2 Munkoff Plucotracks. High-cost Honeycrisp. Everything now is about efficiency and not wasting time, Allison said. The DeMaries hire up to 13 H2A workers for spring tasks and 39 for harvest. New York State's agricultural overtime threshold is gradually dropping to 40 hours per week by 2032, so they're building more housing in anticipation of hiring more workers, Kristen said. They grow 200 acres of apples and don't plan any large-scale expansion beyond that. High costs and low prices are causing double bind for apple growers. The work I did on projections basically showed that if you grow a high-quality apple and get a good return, you don't need a 500-acre farm, Allison said. The search for high-quality apples put the DeMaries on the forefront of testing new varieties, Wittenbach said. Menisca, marketed as Sweet Tango, has been a profitable club variety for them. They have trial plots of other managed and open varieties, including apples from the Midwest Apple Improvement Association, or MAIA. New varieties don't always pay off. It takes years to figure out an apple's strengths and weaknesses, and you can't predict how consumers will react to it, Allison said. We're always willing to try something new, Tom said. If something doesn't work, we're not afraid to admit a mistake and either graft it over or take it out. When Kristen came back to the family farm a few years ago, one of her first projects was to digitize the drip irrigation system. Turning manual irrigation valves on and off took up to 30 labor hours per week. It was so inefficient, she said. I thought there has to be a better way. She adopted Hunter irrigation software to schedule irrigation in 2023. She can turn water off and on by block using Bluetooth technology as long as she's within 50 feet of a valve. The new system halved their irrigation costs in the first year. They use Crop Tracker software to track harvest, delivery, and shipping records. We used to reconcile by hand, which took weeks, Kristen said. With this, we went from 2 weeks to reconcile to half a day. They're trialing Orchard Robotics cameras and Aurea imaging drones to aid precision crop load management. AgriTrack software tracks worker hours, she said. When considering new technology, Kristen asks herself, what problem is this solving? Can I solve it with a pen and paper, or do I need technology to fix it? I don't want to just adopt new technology for the sake of it, she said. Adopting new technology also requires patience. You have to give it a couple of years to work out the kinks, Kristen said. If you try it and have problems and give up, you're never going to get anywhere. Patience paid off with Extende, the reflective fabric they use to redden apples. They've spent the past few years figuring out how to cost-effectively deploy it. Rolling it out, and especially rolling it back up, takes a lot of labor. But even with labor and material costs added in, Extende can net them an additional $1,800 per acre, even on varieties like Gala. Far and away, it pays off, Kristen said. It's just trying to figure out how to use it efficiently. Tom and Allison have learned lessons from growers around the world, especially on International Fruit Tree Association tours. They first saw the benefits of Extende during an IFTA tour of New Zealand. Neither one of us believed in staying home, said Tom, who previously served on IFTA's board of directors. You learn a lot more by traveling around the world to see what else is being done. Growers have learned a lot from them, too. Demery Fruit Farm is a popular place to visit. They've hosted many tours over the years, and many people in the industry drop by on personal visits. Also on the front page, County Treasurer Patrick Schmidt resigns. Wayne County Treasurer Patrick Schmidt has announced that he will step down from his elected position effective January 4, 2026. Schmidt, who has served as county treasurer since January 1, 2019, said the decision reflects a personal desire to pursue new opportunities outside of public office. This was not an easy decision, Schmidt said. After careful thought, I've concluded that it's time for me to move on. The treasurer's role is to serve as an independent voice for taxpayers on financial matters and to maintain the county's books and records. Schmidt acknowledged that the position comes with unique challenges and responsibilities. Public service requires collaboration and trust, and while there are always differing perspectives, I remain proud of the work my team has accomplished, he noted. Schmidt was last elected in 2023, and his term of office would have ended December 31, 2026. Treasurer Schmidt confirmed he will work closely with the staff to ensure a smooth transition. Next on the front page, update on Chad Campbell parole. In 1990, Chad Campbell of Palmyra murdered a classmate, 15-year-old Cynthia Lewis, and the 15-month-old child she was babysitting, Curtis Rizzo, brutally stabbing each to death and leaving them on Palmac school property. He was convicted and has served 35 years in prison. He is currently incarcerated at Woodburn Correctional Facility in upstate New York. Since he has an open date for release, it could occur any time from now until March of 2026. New York State parole rules generally require an inmate to return to the county of conviction unless an approved alternative residence is found elsewhere. According to the victims' families, they were informed of the imminent parole of Campbell in November and were told that he will be living in a residence in Brooklyn, New York, and will not take up residence again in Palmyra, as had been reported by several news agencies. And lastly on the front page, free Christmas concert in Wolcott on December 14th. The Wolcott Christmas concert is back in town, and this will be the 25th anniversary affair. Chris Kenyon and Kelly Patchen Loveless are pleased to announce they are keeping the tradition alive with sponsorship from Lions National Bank. Slated for 3 p.m. on Sunday, December 14th at the First Presbyterian Church, 11988 West Main Street, Wolcott, the concert is free and open to the public and is appropriate for all ages. Next, In This Corner by Ron Holdraker, owner-editor. The Holdraker Christmas Tree Evolution. We had a new house in the Gananda development in 1986 and were excited about the thought of decorating the house and especially the Christmas tree. In support of local business, we went to a nearby store to purchase just the right tree. It was decorated to the max and was a proud achievement of the relatively new homeowners. Yeah, that glee didn't last. Within a week, all the needles seemed to jump for their lives to the floor, and the Holdraker family was left with less than a Charlie Brown fiasco. Out to buy another tree and repeat the whole procedure. Years later, it was decided that a fresh-cut tree was perhaps the best choice. It was a freezing day, and while wife Patty and young son Devin stayed in the car, warm and toasty, older son Wade and myself hiked through the back fields looking for just the right one. "Nope, not that one," stated the lad. I was getting early-stage frostbite as I vehemently urged the kid to choose now. After getting on my back in the deep snow and hacking away at the tree that satisfied my desire to ever cut my own tree in the future dimmed, we dragged it back, paid for the damn tree, and hauled it off home. As I grumbled, putting the tree into the stand, again on my back under the beast, a dead bird fell in my face. Then there was the stepping on falling needles in the days that followed. That was it. From that day forward, all Holdraker trees would be artificial. After Christmas, we went to get the discounted trees and settled on what we thought was the right one. Christmas came again, and the realistic tree, the one that required each limb to be placed in the right colored hole, and spent hours fluffing and turning the new tree best to the right facing view. Countless hours spent decorating and moving to make it the best looking ? Tree. In the following years, I experienced tree trepidation, hauling that undersized box up from the basement and decoding, remembering which was part 1, 2, and 3. "Where is the damn stand?" I asked, struggling to put the uncooperative tree together. Of course, the middle string of lights would not light up, and there was confusion of which plug went where. Over the years, Christmas was seen as pure hell. I required the tree to be taken down after all presents were peeled back, usually the same or next day. As time passed, it was always disassembled Christmas night, a tradition I could live with. But even the easiest of tree assembly was not enough. Over the decades, I have given away many, many unsatisfying artificial Christmas trees. Not this year. I searched for the now perfect tree and found it. It sets up and can be taken down in a minute or two if you are slow. I purchased the Superstar Santa Pop-Up Tree. 3 easy poles put together and the 7-foot, 9.7-pound tree fully decorated with festive decorations and so many twinkling LED lights. You simply lift the flat tree to the top and let it drop down. Initially, upon notifying wife Patty of my purchase, she scowled at the idea and purchase. It arrived within days, and just as promised, it was in place within minutes. It also came with a foot pedal and hand remote to change to my desire 7 different colors and 32 light molds. Upon the completion of Christmas Day, the tree lays neatly flat and comes with an easy storage bag for that stress-free holiday. Easy storage in the thin bag is a definite plus. Even wife Patty was amazed at the beauty and ease of assembly and features. Yeah, she stated, it looks pretty good. The superstar tree comes in different heights and yet is thin enough to give all the visible presents their glory. There now are several manufacturers and varying prices. Mine cost a total of $175, including tax and shipping. It will last forever, or at least until my dying days. I no longer dread Christmas, for the most part. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Times of Wayne County on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. And now in the thumbs down column, time and time again, Trump appointee Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth has screwed up. Now he is put on the hot seat about orders involving the quasi-legal alleged speedboat hits by the U.S. military. Pete Hegseth barely squeaked through a grueling Senate confirmation process to become Secretary of Defense earlier this year, facing lawmakers wary of the Fox News Channel host and skeptical of his capacity, temperament, and fitness for the job. Hegseth is facing fresh scrutiny after a Pentagon Inspector General's report found he risked the safety of U.S. military personnel by texting war plans in a Signal group chat. Meanwhile, questions about a double-tap strike on an alleged drug boat in the Caribbean earlier this year continue as the senior commander who ordered the follow-up strike is expected to defend the call to congressional lawmakers. Adding insult to the injury, the Pentagon is also dealing with a new lawsuit from the New York Times filed Thursday. Now, in what may be his most career-defining moment yet, Hegseth is confronting questions about the use of military force and demands he released the videotapes after a special operations team reportedly attacked survivors of a strike on an alleged drug boat off the coast of Venezuela. Some lawmakers and legal experts say the second strike would have violated the laws of armed conflict. These are serious charges, and that's the reason we're going to have special oversight, said Senator Roger Wicker of Mississippi, the Republican chair of the Senate Armed Services Committee. Next, in the People section, we have a one-on-one interview by Patty Holdraker of Laura Elsbury, newly elected supervisor for the town of Walworth, former Wayne County Sheriff's deputy. Where were you born and raised? I was born and raised right here in Walworth, along with 2 older sisters and a younger brother, in the same house my dad was raised in. My husband and I currently live in the same house with 2 of our 3 kids, the oldest grown and flown, but within driving distance. Tell me about your parents and any sibling. My dad worked at St. Mary's Hospital as the head of facility management, all shifts. Mom was a stay-at-home mom until we were teenagers. She taught school for a stint and was a town board member, town supervisor, and finally retired from the county as director of the IDA. Smartest woman I know. What was my most monumental memory as a kid? Oof, I was maybe 6 or 7. My brother and I had been sledding, and the back hill was slick with ice. He went in for dinner, but I got stuck on the hill. Dad finally came out. I was sure I was going to die there, though it was probably only a few minutes. And instead of just pulling me up the hill, helped me stand and showed me to stomp through the ice. Seems like a small thing, but I think that's where I get the importance of helping by teaching. I remember going in the house with him and the windows all steamed up from Mom cooking some kind of roast. You can't get that from a crock pot. I hate crock pot food. I graduated from Wayne Central in 1996. I do not recall many fun things about school, maybe skipping to have fun. Turned out okay, though. What do you do currently as a job, and how did you get there? I am currently retired from 24 years in law enforcement. Started with Monroe County part-time in 1999 and transferred to Wayne County in 2002. I retired from Wayne County in 2024 as a sergeant of the road patrol. Do you have hobbies? I enjoy reading, mostly thrillers and crime novels. Imagine that. Currently, I have the pleasure of watching my grandbaby a couple days a week, which keeps me on my toes. What does the future look like? I look forward to starting a new path in January as Walworth Town Supervisor. I believe Walworth is a beautiful little town with a lot to offer. My biggest goal today is to have as smooth a transition as possible. While attending meetings and spending time with Supervisor Rick Johnson, I have learned a lot, but expect to learn so much more and can't wait to work with our town employees and the residents of Walworth. And the question of the year, what is the meaning of life? I don't have that answer. For me, I hope that I have and will make a positive impact on people, mostly my family. Raise my kids right, to be kind, stand up to people when necessary, and don't take crap. That they have a purpose in no matter what they choose to do, and that they experience real love. Next in People News, Ontario Walworth Rotary Club donates dictionaries to every Wayne Elementary third grader. On November 25th, the Ontario Walworth Rotary Club continued its long-standing tradition by presenting every third grade student at Wayne Elementary School with their very own dictionary. This year, 140 third graders received a personal copy, a gift that supports the Rotary's mission to promote literacy and foster a love of learning among young students. The annual donation is part of the Rotary's broader commitment to education and community service. By providing students with a tangible resource they can use both in and out of the classroom, the club aims to empower children with tools that strengthen vocabulary, reading comprehension, and curiosity. During the visit, the students eagerly flipped through their new dictionaries, skimming pages, exploring new words, and even looking up the definition of literacy itself. Many also enjoyed searching for the longest word in the English language, adding an element of fun and discovery to the experience. Wayne Central School District commented that they were grateful for the Ontario Walworth Rotary Club's continued dedication to its students and their educational growth. Their generosity reinforces the importance of community partnerships in supporting literacy and lifelong learning. Next in People News, Newark launches holiday season with a strong turnout and a heartwarming weekend. Newark opened the holiday season with energy, tradition, and tremendous community spirit as the village celebrated a highly successful Home for the Holidays weekend. The festivities began Thanksgiving morning with the 48th annual Turkey Day race, where 136 runners took on the 5-mile course hosted by the Newark Cross Country Boosters. Local standout Braxton Guy of Newark claimed the men's overall title with a finishing time of 28:13, and Anna Lee Porter of Syracuse earned the women's overall win at 34:30. As families and visitors enjoyed shopping in Newark's many small businesses on Saturday, anticipation grew for the evening celebration. By late afternoon, Main Street was lined with spectators as the Newark Chamber of Commerce and the Village of Newark launched the Home for the Holidays lighted parade and annual tree lighting. This year's Grand Marshal, Tanner LaMagna, joined by his family, signaled the start of the parade with a blast of the air horn at 5:15 p.m. 35 lighted vehicles, floats, and displays made their way down Main Street, filling downtown with music, lights, and festive excitement. Several families who were home for the holiday shared that their young children experienced their very first snowfall during their visit, a moment that added a special layer of magic to the weekend. Parade judges included Village Trustees Stu Blodgett and Josh Arnold, Arcadia Town Supervisor Don Piscotti, and the Grinch, who had officially received medical confirmation earlier in the day that his heart had grown 3 sizes thanks to Newark's holiday spirit. Lighted Parade Award winners, Best in Show, Black and White Paving, Best Use of Lights, New York Central Hose Company No. 5, Best Music, Schramm Trucking LLC, Best Emergency Service Vehicle, Newark Arcadia EMS, Best Farm Equipment, ELVI Farms, Best Youth Group, Kelly School Bucket Brigade. Also in People News, Walworth Lions plan Breakfast with Santa. The Walworth Lions Club will be hosting its annual Breakfast with Santa on Saturday, December 13th from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. at the Wayne Central High School cafeteria. The Walworth Lions Club operates out of Walworth, New York. Its mission is to serve Walworth and neighboring communities by helping those in need, providing beneficial services, and hosting entertaining events. It is solely supported by community donations and local events. All proceeds from this event go to the American Legion Riders Post 394 Food Box Program. The American Legion Riders Post 394 operates out of Williamson, New York. Their food box program provides food boxes which are delivered 5 times each year: Easter, Independence Day, Labor Day, Thanksgiving, and Christmas, to eligible Wayne County veterans. The cost for Breakfast with Santa is adults $10 and kids $5. A new addition this year will be a kids' craft table. Coloring stations and paper tree ornaments for construction will be available. The menu includes pancakes, eggs, sausage, juice, and coffee. Lions Clubs International, of which the Walworth Lions Club is a member, is the world's largest service club organization, with more than 1.4 million members in approximately 46,000 clubs in more than 200 countries and geographical areas around the world. Thank you for supporting both the Walworth Lions Club and American Legion Riders, Post 394. Lastly in People News, we have a picture caption. With donations from the community, the 3rd and 4th graders from Brownie Junior Girl Scout Troop 40149 in Ontario were able to donate 47 birthday boxes to the Wayne Central School District's food pantry, as well as the Ontario Food Pantry. These donations will help those in need in our community have the opportunity to have access to everything they need to make a birthday cake. Now from the history page, historical happenings in Macedon. To say that history is happening in Macedon is an understatement. The Macedon Historical Society is striving hard to provide programming that educates and inspires the people in our community. It's not too late to join us. Here are some upcoming events and a recap of some that have already occurred. Sunday, December 7th at 1, join us at Lock 61 directly across from the entrance to Lock 30 for an unveiling of Macedon's latest historical marker. Lock 61 was a double lock built as part of the enlarged Erie Canal. Built in 1842, it helped to ease the congestion caused by the dramatic increase in shipping on the canal. You'll notice this marker is different from others provided by the William Pomeroy Foundation. It is part of their historic transportation marker series. The colors are blue and white with a black pole instead of traditional blue and gold. Following the unveiling, all are welcome to join us at the Macedon Center Meeting House for a holiday open house. From 2 to 4 p.m., we will be celebrating different holiday traditions with Merry Mischief. Merry Mischief is a fun, harmonious musical act dedicated to harmony, fun, and mischief. Santa and Mrs. Claus are going to be an exciting addition to this event. Children and adults are all welcome to join in the festivities, which will include a tribute tree lighting. Macedon Historical Society events you may have missed. The History Fair. In the 1970s, 1980s, the social studies teacher duo of Dave Tabor and Jean Bavis promoted history in our community with a yearly history jamboree. Remnants of these events are still on display at the Macedon Academy. Not to be outdone, Mrs. Karen Thomas, encouraged by one of her sixth graders, decided to have a history fair this year. This event was outstanding. With nearly 20 students in grades 3 through 5 participating, the historic Macedon Academy, built in 1853, was brimming with excitement on November 20th. Each of these students researched and created a display about their topic. Topics ranged from biographical to scientific to local and worldwide history. The students and their families shared in the excitement. Each student was present to talk about their research, the project, and the process. Additional photos can be seen on our website. PELMAC should be proud of Mrs. Thomas and the work these young people did. Not only their research, but their ability to speak in a public setting at such a young age. Highlights from the event are accessible on the PELMAC webpage. Authors Forum. On November 2nd, 9 local authors joined us at the Macedon Center Meeting House, former Grange, to share their craft. It was a fabulous time to learn from one another and to share what makes writing and reading so special. Authors included Dorothy Callahan, Rand Darrow, Sally Valentine, Chuck Martin, Scott Gibala Broxholm, Francis Topper, Pam Lee, Rita Gobert, and Christopher Blomgren. In addition to what inspires them, we learned a little about the publishing process. Mr. Broxholm shared his skill with animation. On October 19th, provided an opportunity for many to enjoy the talents of Mr. Dave Ruch. His knowledge of local history, folk songs, and instruments ensured an afternoon of toe-tapping, hand-clapping, and song-singing fun. Whether playing the guitar, banjo, jaw harp, or spoons, Dave taught and entertained us all. And yes, it is 15 years on the Erie Canal, but we won't complain if you sing it with 15 miles. Once again, the Macedon Academy was a place of education and entertainment for many. We invite you to join us in promoting and preserving the history of Macedon and our region. Next year is going to be exciting as we celebrate our country's 250th or semi-sesquicentennial anniversary. If you are interested in finding out more about the Macedon Historical Society, join us at our open house on December 7th or drop us a line at our website. All are welcome. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Times of Wayne County on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Next, the Senior Newsline by Matilda Charles. This is a new scam, but then it's what we expect from thieves, yet another way to steal from us. This one involves our innocent-seeming bank debit card, a scammer, and a pair of scissors. Here's how it works. You'll get a call from someone claiming to be from your bank who says there is fraudulent activity happening on your account and they need your help. You'll be told that you need to act fast before you lose all your money. The scammers will tell you to cut up your debit card, but not to cut up the little microchip on the card. Put all the pieces, they'll say, in an envelope and leave it at your door, because a bank official is going to rush over to take possession of the evidence. Oh, and there will be one last little detail they'll need, your bank PIN, PIN. By that time, if you're sufficiently rattled, you'll willingly tell them the number. Stay calm to foil scammers. A scammer will quickly show up at your door to grab the envelope. Armed with that little card chip and your PIN, they can quickly empty your account. The key is for you to not get rattled, to not let scammers direct your actions. If you're suspicious about any call, hang up. It's okay, even preferable in this case, to be rude. call the bank or company on their official number, and ask if they were trying to contact you about fraudulent activity on your account. If your debit card or any card expires and the bank or company sends you a replacement, cut up the old one. Be sure to cut through the chip, the magnetic strip on the back, and the numbers as well as your name. Divide them up in multiple trash bags to keep the pieces apart. Remember, stay calm to defeat the scammers. Our next article, The Legacy of Dairy Farming in and Around Walworth, by Walworth Town Historian Jean Bavis. The history of dairy farming in the Walworth area is both rich and vibrant. Many local residents are likely familiar with the mural displayed at the Walworth Post Office, which commemorates the arrival of the first herd of Holstein cattle in 1879, brought to the region by Theron G. Yeomans. This pivotal moment marked the beginning of a long-standing tradition in the community. In addition to the mural, recent events such as Walworth Historical Society gatherings and the Summer Festival Parade have featured the Holstein cow statue and the Holstein bench. These serve as visible reminders of the important role that dairy farming has played in shaping the identity of the Walworth area. They are part of ongoing initiatives to celebrate and preserve this agricultural heritage. Community involvement and upcoming projects. The Walworth Historical Society is currently seeking assistance from the community for several upcoming projects scheduled for 2026. A key initiative is the creation of a small booklet dedicated to the history of dairy farming in the region. To bring this project to fruition, the Society is requesting contributions in the form of photographs, personal or secondhand accounts of farm life, research on local farmers, and information about farm structures and equipment. Historic photos are also needed. The Society holds a list of farms compiled by the late Carlisle Darren, which documents over 80 dairy farmers across approximately 60 different farms throughout the years. However, there are still many individuals and farms about which little or no information is available. Community members are encouraged to help fill these gaps by sharing their knowledge and resources. How to participate? To view the list of farms or to contribute information, please visit the Walworth Historical Society website at www.walworthhistoricalsociety.org. You may also contact Town Historian Jean Bavis directly by phone at area code 315-573-2768 or via email at jeanbavis71@gmail.com. Volunteers interested in supporting these projects are warmly invited to reach out to Jean. Also in People News, nominate a local small business owner. Help the Wayne County Business Council shine a light on the most dedicated small business owner in Wayne County. Nominate your favorite Wayne County small business owner who goes above and beyond to serve our community with exceptional service, innovation, and dedication. The winner will be recognized at the Wayne County Business Council holiday party on December 10th at Lyons National Bank in Ontario, New York. Self-nominations are encouraged. Submit your nominations to waynecountybusinesscouncil@gmail.com and include the name of the business, owner being nominated, address, phone number, and email address. List any community groups, clubs, or organizations of which the nominee is a member. Include an explanation of why you believe your nominee should win. Criteria: must have been in operation for 3 years or more, must demonstrate business success, sustained growth, and innovation in business practices, must demonstrate community support and contributions, must be a for-profit business. And we have a reminder. You have until December 18th to send in those adorable baby pictures and brief write-ups of your children and grandchildren born during 2025 to families in Wayne County. Our Babies in Review edition will be included in our December 28th issue. If you are a family member who has been blessed with a baby delivery this year in Wayne County, or if you are from Wayne County, you can send in your photo to news@waynetimes.com. Please include baby's name, birth date, parents' names and their town, and grandparents' names and their town, and tell us if the baby is a boy or girl. Please include a phone number in case there are additional questions. Next, we have a notice. Lyons Central School Winter Bazaar scheduled December 13th. From 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., Winter Bazaar Shopping. All local crafters and vendors, come grab those special gifts and support our community. Fresh baked goodies ready to go home. Kids Crafting, sponsored by Reliant Credit Union. Kids make and take their own creation. And lastly, 10 to 4, Lyons Veterinary Clinic sponsored treats for the kids and pets. 10:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m., visit with Santa and pictures. Free digital downloaded pictures from LCC Facebook page. Rolling Stones Pizza Truck, pizza and more all day. Throughout the day, Lyons Central School Chorus, 11:30 a.m., Pumpkin Palooza Charity Silent Auction ends 2:30, LCC Grinch Raffle ends 3:30, Help for Hearts Food Drive Raffle ends 4 p.m. Next, we have the Health and Wellness section. National Influenza Vaccination Week by Craig Hunt, Wayne County Public Health. With the holiday season on the horizon, many of us are eager to reunite with loved ones, celebrate together, and soak in the festive cheer. However, these joyful gatherings can also increase the risk of spreading the flu and other respiratory illnesses. That's why National Influenza Vaccination Week is a wonderful reminder for us all to get our flu shot. Doing so helps protect ourselves, our families, and our communities throughout the season. The flu can range from mild to severe and can be fatal. Symptoms often start suddenly and include fever, chills, cough, sore throat, runny or stuffy nose, muscle aches, headaches, and fatigue. Cold and flu differ. Colds develop gradually with rare fever, mild aches, occasional chills, fatigue, sneezing, a mild cough, a stuffy nose, and a sore throat, and rarely headaches. Influenza begins abruptly, with high fever lasting 3 to 4 days, severe aches, chills, fatigue, sneezing, severe cough, chest discomfort, possible stuffy nose, sore throat, and headaches. Getting the flu vaccine annually reduces illness, severity, and hospitalizations. The CDC reports the 2019-2020 season prevented about 7 million illnesses and 100,000 hospitalizations. Vaccinated people with the flu face less severe outcomes, like 26% fewer ICU admissions. Flu shots are especially important for those with chronic conditions and pregnant women, protecting both mother and infant. Vaccination also shields vulnerable groups like infants and the elderly from serious complications. The CDC recommends everyone 6 months and older get a yearly flu vaccine, with few exceptions. Immunity wanes, so annual shots are needed. Flu viruses mutate yearly, requiring updated vaccines. Vaccines can't cause flu. They contain inactivated viruses, proteins, or weakened live virus, as in nasal sprays. Side effects are mild, including soreness, redness, swelling, fever, headache, or muscle aches that last 1 to 2 days. Nasal sprays may cause brief symptoms like runny nose or a sore throat. Overall, side effects are much less severe than actual flu symptoms. This holiday season, take a moment to prioritize safety for yourself and your loved ones. Consider getting vaccinated, stay informed, and enjoy the festivities with peace of mind. If you'd like to learn more about flu vaccination clinics in Wayne County, or if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to Wayne County Public Health at area code 315-946-5749 or visit our website. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Times of Wayne County on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Next, we have the Sheriff's Corner. Well, we dodged it as long as we could. The snow is now here. Fun for some, but not so much for others. As our winter season progresses, we are all guaranteed a little work. For most of us, there is a shovel in our near future, if not a plow, tractor, four-wheeler, or a snowblower. No matter what we use, we need clear driveways and sidewalks. The challenge each year is what to do with all of that snow. Hopefully, you have a place on your property where you can pile it, which doesn't obstruct anyone's view as they approach a roadway. Common courtesy dictates that you keep your neighbors and vehicle operators in mind while you're moving mounds of that Arctic fairy dust. Please don't create a situation that will leave a neighbor wondering when he or she is going to get hit as they pull out of their driveway because you didn't leave them an unobstructed view. One other thing to keep in mind is that it is illegal to leave snow in the road. If using a plow of any size to move the snow, and the only place to pile it is across the road, you must clear all of it. Vehicle and Traffic Law Section 1219 addresses offenses against putting injurious substances on the highway and specifically names snow. Any amount left on the road that could pose a hazard to the free use of that road is problematic. If a vehicle hits a snow trail that you left in the road that causes an accident, not only could you be looking at a ticket, you could be looking at a civil action for damages related to that seemingly harmless trail you left in the road. Let's look out for one another this winter. Sheriff Milby also reports, on October 22nd, we had 6 deputy sheriff recruits graduate from the Finger Lakes Law Enforcement Academy. Recruit deputies Patrick Bruton, Lee Vaughn, Joel Gleason, Nicholas Cafaro, John Molisani, and Joshua Ike have been patrolling the county with our field training officers until they are prepared to go solo within the next few weeks. On October 17th, we held a swearing-in ceremony for 5 new members to the sheriff's office. We welcomed public safety dispatcher Alana Jackson, corrections officers Jacob Van Camp and Bryce Primo, and deputy sheriff recruits Preston Berrios and Andrew Gabbard. We have had several big anniversaries with the sheriff's office recently. Sergeant Thomas Munzert, 10 years, dispatcher April Brooks, 10 years, dispatcher Star Rising, 10 years, deputy Felicia Stevens, 10 years, corrections officer Matthew Santel, 10 years, corrections officer Chris Carr, 15 years, Sergeant Zach Angst, 15 years, and Deputy Stephen Brooks, 15 years. We thank you all for your service and dedication to Wayne County. If you would like to speak to someone at the Sheriff's Office, you can contact us at area code 315-946-9711. Be well, Rob Milby. Also in Law and Order, Court affirms Farmworkers Labor Union as Wayne County bargaining representative under landmark state law. PERB's decision upheld to certify United Farm Workers as recognized bargaining unit at Wayne County Farm. Attempt by Waffler Farms to avoid legal bargaining obligations again denied. On Monday, Wayne County Supreme Court Justice Richard Healy ruled that the New York State Public Employment Relations Board acted rationally and properly in all respects in certifying United Farm Workers as the bargaining representative for farm laborers working at Waffler Farms. This ruling marks a victory for farm workers and reaffirms the bargaining rights established under the state's landmark Farm Laborers Fair Labor Practices Act, said PERB Chair Timothy Connick. Hopefully, Waffler will finally just comply with the law, negotiate with the union, and stop all this litigation. This has been going on for more than 3 years now. It's just not fair to the workers. United Farm Workers initially sought to be certified in October 2022 to be the bargaining representative for farm laborers at the Wayne County Farm. Wafler Farms repeatedly fought that certification through multiple administrative devices at PERB. United Farm Workers was certified by PERB in May 2023. Wafler Farms responded by filing an administrative appeal, a court action, and an unprecedented 7 requests for stays, all lost or ultimately denied, to negate the union's recognition and deny its workers the right to unionize. Meanwhile, Wafler Farms rebuffed attempts to bargain with the United Farm Workers. Finally, Wafler Farms refused to attend an arbitration hearing held in January. Hearings are established under New York State law when farm employers and a union cannot reach an agreement. In his ruling, Justice Healy further rejected Wafler's challenge to the 2-year labor award issued by the arbitrator. Wafler's due process rights are not violated, as Wafler had ample notice and opportunities to be heard that UFW sought compulsory arbitration, Justice Healy found. Next, in sports, congratulations to the 2025 Lions Scholar Athlete Teams for Fall. These athletic teams have achieved a high level of academic success, with more than 75% of team members maintaining a GPA of 90 or higher while participating in sports. The girls' varsity volleyball team is pictured. Lions girls' varsity tennis team was named a Scholar Athlete Team. Lions varsity golf team was named a Scholar Athlete Team. Next, from the Humane Society of Wayne County, Pets of the Week. You can call them at 315-946-3389. Petunia is a 4-year-old spayed female short-haired tortoiseshell kitty. She came to the shelter because his owner could no longer care for her. She is an independent kitty looking for a calm and patient home. She has not been around other cats or dogs and would be better suited for being the only pet in the home. She likes to be curious and investigate her surroundings. If you are interested in meeting her, please contact the shelter to make sure she is not at one of our off-site adoption centers. Petunia is available through our adult companion program to those who qualify. Juju is a 5-year-old neutered male black, tan, and white shepherd mix. He might be small, but mighty. He loves to go for walks and explore the yard. He knows how to sit for treats. He needs a home without small children or cats. He needs to meet any resident dog. Juju is available through our adult companion program to those who qualify. And now back to our health and wellness column, Ask the Mayo Clinic, 7 strategies to build resiliency. Dear Mayo Clinic, I'll admit I tend toward negative self-talk, and I'm frequently stressed out about work, family, and health concerns. I know other people have problems too, but I feel like they handle it better. What can I do to help myself and be a role model for my children? Answer: resilient people are made, not born. There isn't a gene or a personality trait for resiliency. It's a skill you can practice and strengthen just as you would a muscle. Becoming more resilient is something you can develop at any age or phase of life. 1. Identify 3 good things at the beginning or end of your day. These don't have to be huge. For most people, positive events are in the low to moderate size range, like running into a friend at the store, finding a forgotten dollar in a pocket, or learning that the weird noise in your car only required a quick and inexpensive fix. What matters isn't the intensity of positive experiences, it's the frequency of recognizing them. This exercise helps train our brains to pay more attention to the positive. Try identifying 3 good things every day for 2 weeks, and you'll automatically begin recognizing those positive kernels. 2. Practice gratitude. Ask yourself, who or what am I grateful for? Once again, this is more than just big things, because it's easy to forget all the small things you appreciate. A study conducted among nuns asked them to count their blessings rather than burdens. They were divided into 2 groups. One kept a daily journal of their blessings, the other was the control group. Researchers found that the nuns who expressed more gratitude lived up to a decade longer than those in the control group. To practice this resiliency skill, regularly jot down what you're grateful for or send someone a gratitude letter, email, or text. 3. Try something different. Your brain loves novelty and the new. Notice the new playground equipment at the park or take a different route to the store. At the store, pick up an item you've never tried before. 4. Spend time in nature. Nature is full of novelty. Notice the beauty around you, what's in the sky above, the bark patterns on a tree, and how light streams through clouds after a storm. Try spending 5 minutes outdoors, mentally noting what you see, smell, hear, and feel. 5. Focus on what you can control. You're stuck in traffic. There's nothing you can do about the fender bender that just happened ahead of you. Do you get all worked up, or do you take deep breaths to tamp down the stress and evaluate the situation? Are you in danger? No. Are you going to miss a flight? Probably not. Is there an exit ahead you can take? Yes. Is this a tragedy or an inconvenience? Inconvenience. Will it matter 10 days from now? No. Focus on what you can control, your reaction to the situation. 6. Foster relationships. Relationships are essential to resiliency. You can connect with friends and family for different reasons. It's these people who you value and who value you. They're the ones who will be there for you when faced with the challenges of life, both large and small. 7. Be mindful. Mindfulness is focusing on the moment and paying attention. But being mindful is tough. The brain is easily hijacked from the now by thoughts of the past and future and judgmental thoughts about ourselves and others. The next time you're in a conversation and your mind starts wandering off to what you'll say in response, pull your attention back to the speaker. You don't need to tackle all these strategies at once. Pick one and play around with it. Strengthening your resiliency muscle is a journey. Working on this skill throughout your life can help you grow. It's also a skill you can teach children and set them up to be more resilient as they face the ups and downs of life. You've been listening to a reading of articles and features from the December 7th issue of the Times of Wayne County. Your reader has been Karen. Thank you for listening.